just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind, Ray Charles, number one hit on this day. We're joined here by Ronnie Ellington, Assistant Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Advanced Studies Leadership and Policy at the School of Education and Urban Studies at Morgan State University. Michael Eugene Johnson, longtime community leader, founder and director of the Paul Robeson Institute. David Beard, Education Policy Director for Advocates for Children and Youth. And Hassan Giordano, host of Reporters Roundtable and publisher of DMVDaily.com, who uncovers more stuff than most when it comes to our politics in the state. Good to have all four of you with us.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet at Mark Steiner. Look at some of the tweets that are already there. I saw them come in. You can also jump onto our Facebook pages and leave your comments there, which I'll be checking during the course of the show. Two things happened in our education system in the last couple of days here in Baltimore that were kind of that raised some questions, and people want to know what they mean. One was the closing of a number of schools and putting off the closing of others, and what those mean, which we'll come to in a bit after this first part of our conversation we have. But we'll look at that. There are schools affecting 7 charter schools, 2,800 students, and there are questions about the future of Northwestern High School and other places, other schools in the next couple of years. So we're going to talk a bit about what that means. But first, we open with the other part of the conversation when it was announced that students as young as 3 or 4 years old have been suspended in schools in Baltimore. That had doubled since the previous year to 33 students. A place like Howard County have never suspended anybody that young, saying they have behavioral people to take care of issues when that happens. And Arundel County reported 19. And many people look at this as a kind of a expansion of these zero-tolerance policies and kids being suspended for things like chewing a pastry into the shape of a gun. Some kids were suspended because of fighting other students at 3 or 4 years old. Others were suspended for what people call sexual activity. And I've looked into some of that as well, what that means. So let's talk about that, the efficacy of suspending a 3 or 4-year-old and what should be in its place instead. I think this, our school system is trying to wrestle with this, but David Beard, why don't you start since you've been writing about this?
Yeah, so the issue of pre-K suspensions is one that we were really worried about, A, because every day makes a big difference, particularly in pre-K, as you're learning all of those basic fundamentals that are going to carry you through the rest of your career. And also, a part of pre-K is socialization. It's really the time when you're supposed to be learning how to get along with others, where you're supposed to be learning self-control. And actually, Hassan and I were talking a little bit before, and an important piece here is these are the first time kids are often away from their families and their parents. And so, of course, you're going to have issues coming up. It's all about how you deal with them. And I think, as Howard County said, putting them out of school just should not be one of the options.
And Ronnie, talk about what you know about this in terms of your work with the school system.
Well, I don't work with the school system.
But not with you, but on the parent advisory board.
Yeah, so I'm on the parent advisory board, community advisory board, PCAB. That's a plug for PCAB. So parents who are interested in really participating can actually come to our meetings on Thursdays every other week.
Where are they held?
And the school board, in the boardroom.
I don't know what happened.
So we... As PCAP, our president, Martha, actually had Ms. Indoor, who's the director of safety or something, talk about the new code of conduct. And one of the changes that's been made from the old code of conduct to the new code of conduct is really thinking about more interventions before you get to a level 4 offense, which is suspendable. So I think the school system, Baltimore City, is really being proactive around looking at the data around pre-K and K and first grade suspensions and changing the code of conduct to really address what my other panelists talked about. And so Ms. Indoor talked extensively at our PCAB meeting, I think in October, about why certain changes were made. And they've actually restructured it to have pre-K to 2 as one band, and then 5 to 8 or 5 to 7, I can't remember, and then high school. And so they have different actions for those 3 grade bands responding to that particular concern about pre-K suspension. So I think there are things moving. People are rethinking these zero tolerance policies across schools. And there is activity going on to actually address it. So that's what I know about
Let me ask you all this question. Michael, I'll start with you. We'll go around the room here. And And I'll posit it this way, very frankly: should a 3 or 4 year old ever be suspended from school?
I think Howard County's got it right. First thing, the damage has already been done if you've done that. So all of what people are looking at, sometimes people don't look at things until they're caught. And obviously this is a bunch of information that's being coming out now that people are getting caught on. The problem that we have at the Baltimore City school systems a lot of times is that there's a revolving group of people that come through the school system, and each group that comes through makes another decision, makes another decision, makes another decision till they think that this is the decision they need to have. But for all of us who've had children or have children or nieces or nephews that are 3 years old, if I wouldn't expect my grandson Noah, to have some emerging issues when they're at that age, because like was said prior to my arriving in the room, this is the first time that they've left the family. So they're so accustomed to mom and dad and grandpa and all this and that. And so when they get out, but to even suggest that we would suspend, expel, put out anyone 5 years old and under at any school is really criminal. It's a human rights criminality at the highest level.
You know, first and foremost, I want to thank the author of these articles. Erica Green has done a wonderful job.
Erica's a good reporter.
Beacon of light over there at that publication. But my son just came through pre-K. I'm not going to mention it, which one it is, but, you know, it was 2 years ago. And honestly.
City pre-K.
Yeah, city pre-K. Yeah. And to be quite honest, in my opinion, a lot of these teachers don't have the tolerance to deal with children this age, and they're so quick to kick the kids out of school. Now, a lot of times it's not suspensions. We got to understand that and realize that a lot of these teachers who are in these positions may not be that qualified, but their tolerance level for children aren't there. Once they realized that I could come at any given time because of me running my own business, they started calling every day. Well, he did this, he did that. I have to. And like David said, this is a time for you to teach these young people how to socialize with young people. Malik has never been outside amongst other children. He's an only child. And so once he realized that, oh, the teacher called and I get to spend the rest of the day with daddy, he started acting out on purpose. And so I think, you know, beyond just teaching, we need intervention methods to say, okay, what is wrong with the children who are acting out this way? My biggest thing is from PK to kindergarten, 91 in Baltimore City for pre-K, 673 children suspended in kindergarten alone. These children
over what period?
Over 1 year.
Statewide.
Statewide.
Yeah.
Statewide. Okay. Yeah.
And that is a very big problem and issue that we have to really address, because these kids aren't comprehending half the time what they are doing. They're emulating many a times what they may have seen at home or on television or in the streets. And so instead of just kicking them out, let's start addressing the situation with great programs, intersection, other programs that can address what these kids are going through, especially at home.
Hey, folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about this. We had a tweet just now from David Miller. David Miller writes in, hey, Mark, parent engagement remains the system's Achilles heel. Systems will not thrive without greater commitment to parents, David writes in.
I so agree with David. You know, it's funny because I'm here in two capacities. I'm on the Parent Community Advisory Board. I have a daughter in Baltimore City, and I'm a professor, and I work with education. And I'm always torn as a parent. People say, you know, we want parents involved, but usually the way parents get involved is in a punitive nature or in a I need some money bake sale, and it's really the agenda of the school. It's not really a true partnership. So when you ask the question about should pre-K students ever be suspended or K students ever be suspended, let's go behind that to say, what would have them be suspended? Now, think about a mindset. Right. It's a mindset of, okay, I perceive these students a certain way. They're a threat and a danger. And even as young as 5, they're a threat and a danger. And I would love to look at the demographic data on the suspensions. Bet you it'll have some kind of trend. And yes. I'll leave that.
It
bears out. Yeah.
African American students are almost 3 times as likely to be suspended or expelled. Students with disabilities are more than twice as likely.
Thank you.
And if you are an African American male with a disability,
chances are,
you will be suspended.
Or as they say, it's a wrap.
Yes. That's not just a city problem. That's a statewide problem.
Let me jump right to the phones here and get our listeners to see what they're thinking. 410-319-8888. Baltimore Joe describes himself as a Baltimore City school teacher. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning,
panel.
Good morning.
Well, Mark, I saw you on Monday night. This is the teacher you talked to on Monday night at the. But I wanted to.
Oh yes, yes, right.
There are pressures that that this puts on the teachers. Mm-hmm. I'm a pre-K through second grade elementary special educator. And if a child, these little kids are doing something that's inappropriate in the classroom, the teacher's liable because parents will say, why did you let that child touch my child? You know, another parent will say, so there are pressures on the teachers. That's why teachers are referring these cases because the teacher will be liable to, you know, why did you let this kind of activity happen in your classroom? You know, of course, it was not, it was allowed, but it was, the teacher caught it before it got further. And then the other pressures are the teachers are being asked to do a new curriculum, which is fine, the Common Core, but it requires some things that one time first graders were doing, but we're asking pre-K to do this. So we're asking a teacher to accelerate the curriculum, but also socialize kids. And I think the last thing I want to say, a question may be, do 3- and 4-year-olds need to be at home, or some 3- and 4-year-olds need to be at home with their parents and not in a social situation? Because I tell you, some are not ready yet. So you're asking a teacher to parent 30 kids at a time and teach a rigorous curriculum.
Okay, so
I think is unfair.
Joe, no, I appreciate the call, and I let's wrestle with what you said. The levels to this thing. There are kids who are that young for all kinds of issues at home and other places that do act out, that do attack other kids, that play out sexually with other kids in the classroom. That is real. But the question is, what should the response be? Maybe part of the problem is that we don't have the funds in our school to ensure that there's social workers in every school that can work with kids who need therapy, counseling, that teachers can't always provide. I mean, that's one of the investment problems, I think, with our school.
That's what I wanted to say about the parent. I spoke about it as a parent, but then as an educator myself and working with educators, the brother brought up the real issue of, do we expect teachers to be able to be accountable on all these fronts with very little support for them? That's the bigger issue, too. So, yes, the response should, I don't think it should be suspension, but if there are no alternative responses, then what? Because he's absolutely right. At the end of the day, the parent or the school will say, well, you teacher didn't do X. Now, what do you say to them? So then that becomes kind of the tug of war, if you will, around what to do. Because you're right, suspending isn't the option, but what is? And if there is no social worker, if there is no support for the teacher to address these issues, and they have 30 kids in a class that are 3-year-olds, I don't even know how people can do that. Like, that's nuts to me. What is the alternative if we're not suspending? And I don't think we've talked strategically about that.
And politically, it worried me when these gubernatorial candidates now have jumped on the education bandwagon to say, oh, I'm going to expand pre-K. Well, with results like this, if we can't even get what we have now under control to expand pre-K to 3-year-olds and other 4-year-olds beyond part-time, which would increase the level of children in these classrooms that are already 20 to 30 at least that I know in Baltimore City, it becomes a problem. And Mark, I've always been a proponent. I've never understood the concept of when a child acts out to suspend them and send them home on vacation, because that's exactly what a child thinks it is. Why don't we start, and I know a few advocate organizations have been pushing for this since I was in the legislature working for Salima Marriott, was in school suspension, whereas though you have advocates, you have social workers and other people who can work with these young children in the schools, so it doesn't seem like this is a benefit for their bad
actions. What is blocking that, David? I mean, I can remember, again, as I said, when we started the show in 1993, Lombard Middle School had this in-school suspension program that had amazing results, but it lost its funding from the federal government, so it didn't exist anymore.
I think there's what we hear from the districts is there's a few reasons why they say they don't have the staffing capabilities, they don't have the space capabilities. But I think the issue is, how are you addressing those? There are things you can do, even besides in-school suspension, and getting to the root of the cause, what's going on, even just talking with the child initially, why are you acting like this, particularly for the older students, getting to it. And then if you can't do in-school suspension, there are other alternatives. There's a school in Montgomery County that does a Saturday work program where they come in on a Saturday and they work for 4 hours. There's good old-fashioned detention. There's restorative justice circles where you actually sit around with the people that were victimized and the principal and the parents and the student and talk about what happened, and they actually come up with a consequence together. So there are a lot of options you can do that keeps the child in the classroom, but they still have a consequence and are still held accountable.
We're going to take a very brief break. Do we take the break now? Let's go to the phones first. 410-319-8888. Spice, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I do preschool arts integration education, and I'm a preschool music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in classrooms in Baltimore City with one teacher and 35 mm-hmm. children. I've in classrooms.
That's the problem.
That's yeah. ridiculous.
Go ahead, Spice.
I don't think it's legal, honestly.
It's not.
But also, I have seen children pick up, you know, 4 or 5 year olds pick up chairs and throw them across the room. And so I think that there is definitely a lack of, there aren't enough funds to put more adults in the classrooms. I think we need more behavioralists in the schools. I think if there were teams of adults working with children that have issues, and obviously, you know, the home is very important, and if the kids are getting help at home. So I think it really is a community, it takes a village to raise a child kind of an issue, and I think the punitive way is not good, and sometimes there's no alternative, because there's also a lot of AmeriCorps teachers in the classrooms that don't have the experience with discipline. I think they've been put in the classrooms too early.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's just many issues, and I really appreciate that it's come into light and that there needs to be some stuff done about it.
Spice, thank you so much. Thank you so much. We're going to take a brief break. We have another caller coming up. We're also going to look at this a little more deeply when we come back from this break, and also tackle the issue of the closing of schools in Baltimore City. The hearings that will be taking place in Baltimore until December 2nd when decisions will be made. And I also want to explore with our guests when we come back from this break, what have we learned from the schools that are being closed? Are we learning from the ones that are closing? Are we learning from the ones that aren't and are actually doing work and getting kids ahead? What are we learning from this experience? We'll be right back. Stay with us. That song you hear on just right now is Symphony No. 1 by Dawson, the Negro folk symphony that was first performed in 1934 on this day, and that was the first movement called The Bond of Africa. And one day we'll just do a show about that, and Dawson is an incredible person, and we should actually, the BSO should actually be playing the Negro Symphony. It'd be good for our orchestra to play that. Back to our conversation here. We are joined by Dr. Ronnie Ellington, who is Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Advanced Studies Leadership and Policy in the School of Education Urban Studies here at Morgan State University, and a member of the Parent Committee Advisory Board. Community Advisory Board on the Baltimore City Public Schools. Mark Eugene Johnson, longtime activist and founder and director of the Paul Robeson Institute. Hassan Giordano, who publishes DMVDaily.com, the Reporters Roundtable. David Beard, Education Policy Director for Advocates for Children and Youth. And you at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page or tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So just, you know, I wonder what you think then will come of this very quickly in our city school system. From what you know, especially Ronnie and David, since you're more really intimately involved in the workings of the school system, what comes next? Do you think there'll be some reform here? And what does reform mean?
I do, and actually City Schools is one of the few school districts that has actually really taken this on. They changed some policies a few years ago, which were great changes, but they didn't do a lot with implementation. So not, you know, things got a little better, but sometimes students were sent home without a referral, these sort of unofficial suspensions. But the last year and a half since Karen Inder-Weber came on, she's done an amazing job at trying to work with principals and with schools on A, alternatives, B, on creating a school climate where kids want to be there. Making sure that your staff is on board with creating these climates. So City Schools has actually done a lot, and I think you'll see a lot of positive changes this next year.
You agree, Ronnie?
Yes.
Well, I also think with the other issues of class size that we were talking about, issues of class size and also of having the backup therapeutic and social work staff in our schools is the other piece of this that I think we'd have to talk about.
I mean, I think it's important that, you know, we understand that As my friend said, that, you know, that you have money for what you need, and to always suggest that, you know, that the schools are even real crowded or under size has more to do with someone looking at the number really realistically. There's no excuse for a pre-K class to be over 20.
No, I agree.
I mean,
against the law.
Yeah, and against the law. I mean, I've got
and against the law. Thank you. Keep saying that over and over again.
As I was growing up, I had 22 nieces and nephews I couldn't deal with, so I could imagine strangers being put in the room at that point. And so it's illegal, and hopefully parents, which is the basis of, you know, which most folks don't recognize, is that the schools do not belong to city government. The schools, public schools, belong to the public. And if we can start getting the parents to be as aggressive as they are with the Ravens, as aggressive as they are with their other lives, it's to put back into the schools, the closings, the suspensions of young, little, teeny-weeny people who now they run around and say, oh, you bad, right, will down translate into juvenile detention, translate into the big house. And next thing, we have that cycle going through. And that's what I think the four of us are attempting to do, stop that cycle.
410-319-8888. Final thought on this when we move to the closing of our schools. Meredith in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good morning, all. Good morning.
Good morning.
As a former special education teacher, 10-plus years in the field, I'm so surprised oftentimes when I'm hearing from colleagues that still work in the system that teachers are not being trained in crisis intervention models and techniques. I'm also surprised at this, like, literally no connection with education staff and social work staff and how these things work together, parental interventions, getting parents involved from the door. And I just think that the system is so disconnected. And I don't understand why there's 33 or 4-year-olds in a classroom in the first place. Like, where is the reasoning in this? And I really have to say that we definitely have to train these teachers properly, as well as forging relationships with the parents so that folks can come in and work for the well-being of the child.
Meredith, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let me ask you a question, folks. I'm very curious to see if you are a parent at one of the schools being closed and your thoughts about that at 410-319-8888 and where we are with all this. This is a very touchy subject. Closing schools is always a volatile issue. So, but the question is, when you look at some of the data, and my sense of education is not always driven by data, but when you do look at the data, that some of the schools were closed that I saw, they were closed because their test scores, and again, test scores drive me crazy because that shouldn't be the only way we evaluate things, but their test scores didn't measure up. So what do we learn about that? About they're not measuring up. Or the schools, you know, when they say that there are certain schools like the Friendship Academy of Science and Technology or City Neighbor Schools in Hamilton and the Friendship Academy of Science and others did meet those standards and are doing, seems to be really good work with their kids, and others are not. What are we taking something away from this beyond just the argument over closing or not closing? Ronnie, go ahead. You look like you're about to say, let you begin.
Well, this is a touchy subject
it
with
is.
So many levels,
yeah.
And this is something, you know, as a PCAB member we wrestle with. And one of my colleagues on the board, Edwin Johnson, who is one of the founders of Blue for Drew
I know
James.
Very
yes,
well.
Yes,
my best friends.
Really good
right.
friend. And we have these discussions at PCAB, and they get real, you know, tense. And he was talking about, you know, their mission was to actually support a group of students, African-American males, that tended to be at the bottom of the barrel from the beginning. So right. their mission embedded in that was to actually provide social structures and other things beyond the academics to support their boys in becoming men. So sometimes what happens is you go through learning curves and you go through different phases that show up in quote-unquote low data scores in terms of testing, but the culture, the climate, there are other things in that school that showed it was actually moving forward. So one of my,
what do you mean by that? Was show that it was moving forward?
Like that there was improvements made with this group of boys, that who they were becoming as young men, their manners, I mean, just other aspects of who they were actually improving. Yet, if the test scores don't come up in 2 years or 3 years, then we say we're failing. That's my problem with a one-hit wonder measure. Because it's a one-hit wonder. It's like, okay, well, this is it, and that's all. And you don't really look at other data to say, is there some potential for this to move in a different direction? Or what they took on was very ambitious, and it may take a while to see the so-called academic results in a test score. So,
that's my problem with a lot of this, with the school system, is they look at everything black and white. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love Tisha Edwards. I think she's a great woman. But at the school board hearing the other night, Tuesday, she was, in terms of Bluford Chamberlain, it's like, okay, well, it goes beyond just having them in shirts and ties, talking about Bluford Chamberlain. We need more than that. And she doesn't realize, I think she does, but that comment mm-hmm. was outrageous, to say the least. Wow. It takes more than that. These young men, that meant a lot. Exactly. For a young black man to be able to tie his own tie.
And ride the bus with it on.
Right. I mean, most of
these. And his blue blazer.
I know adults that don't know how to tie ties. So, you know, to run around touting this, oh, we got $1.2 billion. You got million-dollar schools with 50-cent curriculums and sending kids back to bankrupt communities and households. That is a problem. New schools are not going to fix our problem.
So I'm curious about what ACY is thinking about this, too. My producer, Stephanie Mavronis, and I went to Buford. Spent a good amount of time there.
East or west?
East.
East. Oh, that's the newer one.
East. With Edwin, who I have known since we were 11 years old. We've been friends forever. So we went to the school, and one of the things I was struck by was how orderly the hallways were, how teachers, as soon as the kid got out of line, was there saying, you know, young man, this is not how we behave. And they responded. You know, they were kids. They're still acting out, but they responded well. And it was a school that, the only middle school in Baltimore that taught Latin. And I was watching these kids study Latin, speak to me in Latin, and then perform a hip-hop performance in Latin. The question is, how?
And we can't capture that in a test score. My point. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And I'm not suggesting, as a mathematician, I will never say that data isn't important. That would be anti-religious on the math front. But I also am a qualitative researcher, and I understand that test scores capture certain things and not other things. And if we want to really deal with schooling in a holistic way, when we start talking about shutting schools down where kids are going to be misplaced, displaced, et cetera, we need to have a comprehensive way of looking at that and not simply the test score. And I'm not suggesting that Tisha didn't look at some other factors, but those weren't made clear to me when I looked at the presentation to the board that was sent to PCAB. That wasn't clear to me. All that was there was some percentages and numbers, and then that was it. So even if she was using some other data to make those recommendations, that needs to be transparent, because schooling is more than testing. That's not school. That's what my issue is with that. But
let me bring you in this. And I also, as a disclaimer here, as a point of transparency, I did write something in favor of keeping Buford open. So I just want to say, put that out there, that I have a stake in the school, I'm not part of the school, but I did support its efforts. So I have to be very honest about that as I talk about that. So anyway, David, go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't know the circumstances for each one of the seven schools. We're a statewide advocacy organization. So what I will say is, as it relates to the 10-year plan, the under the schools that have very low populations,
underutilization,
it's going to be really difficult to keep a lot of them open under the new plan. And I think that parents last year when the 10-year plan was first presented got that. I mean, we had a lot of parents that came to Annapolis to support the bill that have supported all the efforts since then that were like, I understand my kid's school is going to close, but you know, we're going to be able to send them to these much better schools that are going to meet the needs of kids today because our current schools are not cutting it. You have, you know, schools that don't have science labs. You have schools that don't have the electrical outlets to even have multiple computers. I mean, and not to mention the heat and the cooling issues. So if you don't have schools there that can meet these kids where they're at, then we have a bigger problem. But if you're just basing a school closure, I could not agree more, on just test scores, then you're really not meeting the kids where they're at.
Do we know, and folks, I really, if you get to that school, I really want to hear from you at 410-319-8888, your thoughts. If your kids go to Bluford or any of the schools that we're talking about, we'd love to hear what you think about the schools your kids are in, positive and negative, 410-319-8888. What do we know, and I haven't checked this out, but what do we know about the difference between the test scores of schools that stayed open and those that closed? Not to keep harping on test scores, but this is their criteria, so I'm very curious about what we know about that criteria.
Well, I would have to look at, and I didn't look, I looked at the seven names, but I didn't look strategically at their charters and what their missions were. So sometimes when you have a charter with a particular kind of mission, and I want to go back to Drew Jamison, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Bluford,
that
Drew
blue,
Jamison.
Yeah, I get them
Bluford,
words
Bluford,
mixed up.
Drew Jamison, yes.
Right. When you have a school by its mission designed to deal with African-American males from low SES backgrounds, by definition, you're setting yourself up in terms of, I want to take the students that we have marginalized to the nth degree and provide them an education that's holistic. You have to understand that that may look different than even a city neighbors in the heart of Hamilton that has a certain kind of, you know, demographic and lottery arrangement. I mean, and I love them too. I think City Neighbors is an awesome school, but they're doing good work. My girl Bobby is the bomb. I mean, there's a
Which
whole
is great. Which is great. Yeah,
but the point is, to when you take on that kind of a mission, the school system has to understand that the way your data shows up and fleshes out will be different than a City Neighbors by definition, by charter, by intent. It's not the same kind of deal. So to say now test scores are the be-all, end-all, it will discourage innovative ways of thinking about schooling that may potentially end up with, okay, my test scores are bad because I'm targeting this group of, you know, behavioral students who come from the backgrounds who, you know what I mean? By definition, you're going to have a learning curve, and people are going to be fearful to take on that kind of
right.
a mission
because
they might be closed in 3 years. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly. And Michael, come in on this, but one of the things I want to just comment in between is that what I'd like to know, and something I'd like to explore, maybe come back for another conversation here, is there are schools in Chicago and in New York, especially in the Bronx and Harlem, that are doing incredible work with young people from the same backgrounds. So I'd like to know what their curve was. I mean, how long did it take them
exactly.
to get to the
point
where their kids are being as successful as they
and
are?
And what resources were they provided that may be different from here?
It's usually wraparound. I mean, it's like a whole wraparound.
Right. So there's this, yeah. So there's a lot of issues here. Because I tell you, I was really impressed by some of the schools I've seen, just seeing how those young men behaved and Edwin walking through with no nonsense and the respect the adults got.
And it applies to a lot of schools. I mean, at the same time, you know, you have to look at the human part of these closings. I mean, you're talking about Grove Park. If you were to close Grove Park, children would have to walk across Wabash Avenue and Reisterstown Road to go to another school.
Is Grove Park being closed?
Grove Park is on the list to be closed, too.
Right, that is, yeah.
As for Northwestern, we have the same circumstances. But our scores are up. There is a state score that came out recently that's marked from 1 to 5. 1 and 2 is the best scores. We're number 2. We're part of the top 10 schools.
Of what?
Of these tests that were given for the state level of the schools, of the numbers, or whatever the numbers are. At the end of the day, you have 1 through 5. 1 and 2 are good. There are 10 schools that did 1 and 2. Northwestern is one of them. But, hear me out, but all of the schools that are closing, when you look at the list of where they're recommending them to go, they're not recommending them to go to Northwestern, which has a higher, using numbers, higher test score level. They're talking about sending them to other schools that have lower levels.
Like Forest Park.
And Patterson and other schools. So our concern is right now is, why wouldn't you recommend a school? And let me make this absolutely clear. Northwestern is different than all of the schools that everybody's talking about closing. It looks different. It windows open up. It's built on a courtyard. Its entire athletic campus is within the campus.
It's like the old-fashioned high school.
Yeah,
And we do not have any commercial businesses in and around us
at all. It's a residential community, right.
It was built that way for a purpose.
Right.
We understand at Northwestern that it's not about scores.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
It's about real estate.
Exactly.
And until we start saying that.
What do you mean about real estate?
If you have, let me, and I'll run this real quick, real rapid, as we say. Real rapid, I'm going to go. Here we are in Northwest Baltimore. We're one block away from the county. We have a $250,000 gymnasium that's just been built, is less than 5 years old, that the public's paid for. We have an air-conditioned 997-seat auditorium that the public just paid for. We have the largest library in the system that air-conditioned that the public paid for. We have $1 million of football field and stadium that just been repaired. Now, the difference is when you repair gyms, and make this clear, when you repair stadiums that face the street, you're going to do them differently because you want everyone to say, oh, my, when you drive by Douglas and drive by Dunbar and drive by, oh, they in Mervo, they've done this. It's done inside the campus. So you have four and a half acres of beautiful landscape tree line property that could be a lot of other things than a Baltimore City public school.
For the Jewish community.
For whatever community at the end of the day you want to put it.
Hassan, I take real offense at that.
I think that
I really
that,
do.
That's the politics
that's,
of
that's
it.
That's not the politics, because that community is in a racially mixed community.
Actually, above Northern Parkway, Northern Parkway is actually 60% more African American.
Right.
But I think that Hassan's point is this. Someone who attended Northwestern 39 years ago at Northwestern, we had a very integrated grasp of students there, Jewish and alike. Now the Orthodox Jewish community has built its own infrastructure within that community. We have our own Trayvon Martin instance up until the death.
So what I want to say is that the distinction is there are super religious communities who want that neighborhood to be exclusive. That's reality.
I think at the end of the day, there's also a community there that makes a decision not to come to Northwestern, where yet we are public school and we're available for everybody. Well, but in the summertime, hear me out, but in the summertime, my gymnasium, my swimming pool, my football field, my baseball field is all occupied by the Orthodox Jewish community who uses it as summer camp, when yet none of my young people use it as a summer camp.
These are the issues you both raised this right now. I think are issues that maybe we should come back in another program really to wrestle with, because I think they're very real issues. And I think that what you're describing, I don't want to get off into this right now, but what you're describing needs to be addressed and needs to be changed. And I think it's also true that there are people who don't want to have hundreds of young black kids in that community, in that school,
even though we're successful.
Right. So I think this deserves a larger...
Yeah, so the test score thing, it's selective. Right. I think that's your point, that sometimes we're going to close you based on test scores, but then you're going to have a test... The game keeps changing depending on the political agenda or the financial agenda or some other agenda. I don't even know what it is. I'm not going to be a conspirator.
It's all politics.
Right. So that's I think you raised that brilliantly, that... Some days your test scores determine you staying open. Then, if test scores okay, now it's something else. So we can't really get our hand around what's really driving these decisions, really.
So let me go back to the phones here, and let me also be clear about what happened a moment ago between Hassan and I just a moment ago in this conversation. What I meant, Hassan, by what I said that I took offense, was that it is not the Jewish community. There are elements inside the community who are Jewish who are part of the problem. When we label things like the Jewish community or the black community, then it traces broad brush that I think is incorrect. So that's what I took offense at. So, I mean, I think that, but I think that what we're describing is the real situation. And I think that I promised you, Michael Johnson, earlier, that we would do some very special programs at Northwestern about Northwestern, and we will. So I think that has to be brokered.
And I think that at the end of the day, what we're looking at is young people from the Southern and from all over the city who come to Northwestern, as far as Cherry Hill, come to Northwestern for a reason. And if you're saying it's because you don't have air conditioning, well, you're closing Walbrook High School that has air conditioning.
And I meant no offense by it. But if you look at the online social media, the Twitter wars that are going on because of this. Most people think it's racially motivated in terms of this whole plan. This is only seven schools in June. We got more to come.
That's right.
And a lot of people, especially African Americans, believe it's not a sweeping plan, but a dumping ground for our young black children to get out of neighborhoods that don't want them there.
Right. And well, that and any element that has that sentiment in Northwest Baltimore has to be told, too bad.
And it's not just Northwest. This is going on around the whole city. So I don't want to just like focus. We were just talking about Northwest, and that's the only reason. But this is going on other ways as well.
But I think that the issue of closures is very complex. And Tisha Edwards has made it clear that she wants to come on this program to have a conversation. And we will have this conversation one-on-one with Tisha Edwards around all these issues. And I look forward to all of you participating in that with phone calls and emails and the rest. Let me go to the phone table fast. 410-319-8888. Eric, you're on the air.
Greetings, everybody.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment, definitely, you know, on the same wavelength that you all have been talking about. And I think what's important as we think about the 10-year plan, and as we think about it in the context of 21st century schools, we cannot, for us, but also for those who are representing the school board and the school system, to think through what that looks like in the 21st century for our children, and cannot forget about, things, as you all were talking about, children that are marginalized, that is far too often out of the conversation. When we're talking about, expanding schools, and even as you close schools, whatever, structures we create, the physical structures, we have to transform how we educate and to prepare our children for the 21st century, and not just jobs. We have to, in my opinion, really educate our children in the context of race. I mean, it's not going anywhere, and I think that it's important to not get lumped into the farce that we're in a post-racial, society, and that our education should.
All right. Let's talk about that for a minute, because we only have like 5 minutes left. I want to get to another call. I mean, one of the things the racial makeup of city schools is also changing. You can see that. We had students here at WEA just the other day. I don't know what middle school was in, but fully half the kids, or maybe less than half, to a third and a half the kids who walked down the hallway were Latino kids.
Mm-hmm. Which we have a lot at Northwestern.
And another minority of kids, and there were a small minority of white kids. The school system is also changing that way again in Baltimore, too. So I mean, it's becoming. I think it'd be healthy for the city if it was really was a multiracial school system and multi-class school system like it used to be for a very brief period of time.
Mm-hmm.
A brief, small,
very
window,
brief.
Very brief. We were in that brief window. Very brief window.
You blinked and it was over. I mean, we have a large percentage of South American students. We have a large percentage of Eastern of families that go to Northwestern. We have actually a large multicultural staff at Northwestern, but we do have small numbers at Northwestern. But if if the school system is not encouraging the middle schools to send their kids children to Northwestern, then of course our numbers are going to be down.
So let me just wrap up. And Dave and Ronnie, we have like 3.5 minutes left. And I'm asking talking to the two of you because you have intimate relations with our city schools. What do you think comes next with the school closing? Where do you think we go? What power does the community have to really address their concerns? David, very quickly, and then Ronnie.
There's lots of ways for parents to get involved now in this whole 10-year process, which is all the closings you're going to hear about are all wrapped up into one with the new money. You can't separate it. So there's a lot of process with the stadium authority, with the school district having open meetings, and with the school district. There was an expo a few weeks ago to talk about 21st century schools. What should those schools look like? And parents should be involved in that, so they are helping plan this. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me on how you can get involved at acy.org. But
And so let us know here as well. If you give us the information, we will make sure those announcements go out over the airwaves in our show all the time to get people and the parents.
There's a work session tonight down at the school board. Down to the school board, 200 East North Avenue at 5:30, and it's dealing with about 13 different schools, operator-run schools. So I would advise parents, anybody involved with a lot of these schools, Bluford Jameson being one of them, City Neighborhoods from Hamilton and others, Kip and others, they'll have a hearing tonight, a working session tonight at 5:30. 5:30.
Thank you, Hassan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm always going to encourage parents to become at least come to the Parent Community Advisory Board meetings, because we are the voice of the parents to the school board, and basically around policy, but also some form of advocacy. So we do a lot of information sessions for parents so that they become aware of what's going on. That's one of the things I love about PCAB. I have my issues, but we really do try to have people be informed about the different policies that are coming down the pike for Baltimore City. So we need parents to be there, go to our website, and really start to be intentional about understanding what's happening in their schools. That's my platform. It's like, well, at least you got to know, and then you can create an action plan based on that. But if you don't know, then it's very hard to create some kind of action.
What's your website?
Oh, it's through Baltimore City. I don't have my thing.
We will find it. And
yes,
we'll
so if you put in Parent Community Advisory Board, right, Baltimore City Public Schools, you'll get to it from.
And between all of y'all, what we'll do over the next couple of weeks is every day that we can, we'll just put these announcements as underwriting packages, not charging money, on our program, so we can let community know where to go.
Okay.
So we'll be doing that for all the things you mentioned. Appreciate all of you very much for being
Thanks,
here.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank
great
you.
Discussion.
Thank you.
Ronnie Ellington, Michael Eugene Johnson, Hassan Giordano, David Beard, thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to go out here now with Ellis Marcellus and Irvin Mayfield's Mo Betta Blues. Happy birthday, Ellis Marcellus Sr.